Good morning. Welcome to First Parish of Stowe and Acton, a welcoming Unitarian Universalist congregation. My name is Sue Stewart, and I serve as the co-chair of the auction committee. If this is your first time with us, we're very happy to have you. Please sign one of our guest books, which are located in the vestibule at the front of the church or at the visitor's table at coffee hour, so we can put you on our mailing list for our newsletters and announcements. Everyone is invited to coffee hour after the service. To get there, please exit the church through the door to my left, follow the hallway to the end down the stairs, or take the elevator, and follow the arrows to Fellowship Hall. Child care is available during this service in the nursery if the need arises any time during the service. Please feel free to take your child there where they will be cared for, well cared for. The nursery is located in the lower level of Fellowship Hall, which you get to the same way as Fellowship Hall, but down one more level. If you're not sure where to go, one of our ushers will guide you. On most Sundays, we have religious education classes that children will depart for after the first part of the service. Please see the order of service for more information about our program. All right, Cindy has an announcement.
So today's worship has something of a river flowing through it thematically. And part of going with the flow is sometimes making a few little changes. So you may have noticed that our prelude was different than in your order of service. The postlude will be John Lennon's Imagine. And our middle hymn is not the one printed in your order of service. It is number 1007, which is up here on the board, which is There's a River Flowing in My Soul. I'll announce it again when we get to that point.
I don't normally make announcements about RE things, but I think this one is particularly important. So we have a whole different groups that have been working on different service projects, and there's one at 9 a.m. that has been doing a lot of baking to help some children in Ghana that are in schools with no bathrooms. And so Chris Graberik, who is over here, is working with an organization that is trying to put bathrooms into one school. And it's a really costly thing. So he is, and his organization has been trying to raise money for a bit. And so when I told the kids about this, they were like, we'll bake. So they've been baking. There's just a few, unfortunately, baked goods left. So if you want to help with that at coffee hour or just give extra money, it's a $2,500 that they need. They have about half of that. We raised $240 already this morning. So anything that you can give, 50 cents, a dollar, $5, to help this amazing cause. We take so much for granted in this country that we can walk into any building, and we get upset if we walk into like a store and they're like, they won't let us use their bathroom. And these are children that are going to school and have no bathroom. So please help. And then the other group today is starting a battery and light bulb recycling. So you can bring those in if you have them today and then next Sunday. And then we'll load them up. Natick actually takes those, so I'm just going to bring them right over to our recycle center. All right, thanks. And then we have another announcement.
You know, maybe we should bid on those cookies or something.
That's not a bad way.
I have one already. They're really good.
At 9 o'clock this morning, we honored some Girl Scouts in our service, and I'm going to just tell you a little bit about that today. So the Unitarian Universalist Association has partnered with both the Boy Scouts and those Girl Scouts to have curricula for the religion and life and love and help badges that you can earn. Both of those are several week long curricula, but the Girl Scouts also has a shorter program called My Promise, My Faith, which is just five step badge program. And so a bunch of girls did that with me last week and were honored this week. Was it just last week? Yes. So what they did was first they compared the Girl Scout promise to our church's covenant to see what they had in common, like helping one another. And then they compared the Girl Scout law to the UU principles and to see which law pieces and which principles matched in their themes and impact. And they focused in on one, which was the seventh principle, respect for the interdependent web of all existence of which we are a part, and compared it to pieces of the Girl Scout law, particularly use resources wisely and make the world a better place. They then looked through our hymnals and found hymns that went along with that theme, and then found readings and quotes by UU women that also matched those themes, and then talked to a woman of the church about how she lives out these ideas in her life and how they might live out these ideas in their lives. And then finally, they made posters, one of which is posted in the vestry, about what they learned, and shared those posters with family members and with church members who are down there helping out with auction decorations. And so I just wanted to let you know a little bit about what they did, and we'll probably do a similar program next year. And now I'm going to invite forward Michelle Cote, our Director of Religious Education, with a story.
Good morning. So Cindy's speaking today about spiritual journeys, and it was hard for me to find a story that capsulized what a spiritual journey can be. It's a very deep subject. So I decided that I would share a story that is part of what I feel and where my spiritual journey stems from. I believe that everything and everyone is connected at some visceral level, and I like this story because it references that. It's called The Everything Seed, A Story of Beginnings. Have you ever watched a seed grow? Have you ever noticed how it begins so small, so still, so quiet, like a gift waiting to be opened, and how slowly it wakes up, begins to unfold, growing into something larger and larger and larger? Then you know that whatever comes from a seed usually ends up looking very little like the seed that it came from, which is also true of the very first seed. Once, long, long ago, way back before the beginning, so long ago that there was no such thing as time, because there was no one to count it, everything was a huge, deep, mysterious place, like something just waiting to happen. There were no stars, no sun, no moon. There was no place like Earth, not a drop of water, or a single tree, or rock, or flower, and no living beings anywhere. But in that deep, waiting space was hidden the tiniest point of something no bigger than a seed. It was not a flower seed. It was not an elm tree seed. It was not a seed of corn, although all those things were included in this seed. You might call it the everything seed, because that is what it became. No one knows where that first seed came from, or how it was planted, or how it knew, in the way that only seeds seem to know how long to wait for just the right moment to sprout and grow. But all at once, this tiny seed, cradled and nourished in the rich soil of space, woke up, broke open, and began to unfold, unfolding, unfolding, and blossoming forth into an enormous blazing ball of bright light, like a great grandmother's sun. And the universe was born. Out fluttered the galaxies like a storm of snowflakes, swirling and gathering into the brightest, most blindingly beautiful clouds of stars. And out of those star clouds whirled our own star, the one we call the sun, and our Earth and the moon, and all the round, splitting planets that we had learned how to name. And this is the secret of that tiny seed. You and I were there in the very beginning. Just as the idea for each leaf on a big oak tree lies hidden inside an acorn, we were there with all the stars and planets and rocks and oceans, plants and animals and people. Everything that is now, ever was, or ever will be, was inside that first tiny seed. So whenever you hold the seed in your hand and wonder what it could become, imagine how you and all that is here once came from the tiniest speck of that everything seed, before it sprouted and grew long, long ago in the way back beginning of time. Now, if this were an ordinary story, it would end right here. But this story of the universe keeps unfolding. What once began in a blazing blossom of light continues every day. New stars sprout open in the deep soil of space. New plants and animals appear on the earth. Seeds of many kinds are scattered all over the earth to help us remember. And new people are born every day with the spark of that first light still alive and burning deep inside, waiting, like the everything seed, to shine in ways that are yet to be known. And that's the end. All right, as is our custom, we are going to take the light of our chalice to our religious education program. We have a very small group of one today, but Devin will help us out.
Our words for prayer or meditation this morning are titled Walking the Crooked Path by Thomas Rhodes. Holy Spirit of life and love, you who are our source and our ultimate destiny, lead us this day on a crooked path. So often we are in so much of a hurry, taking the direct route to our goal, not allowing ourselves to be distracted, sometimes being too direct with one another in all that we seek to do, to be, and to have. But we can see that no river takes a direct path to the sea. Your trees and bushes sprout crooked limbs, and beasts, birds, insects meander in their search for food, shelter, or a mate. We lose so much when we take the direct route, the interstate which bypasses the quaint township, the arrow that misses the mark, the chance to stop and say, hello, and how are you, and really listen to the reply. So lead us on the crooked path, past wandering streams and crooked trees, following our heart's desire, not just duty's demands, for the crooked path also leads us home. Blessed be, and amen. Our next hymn is number 1007 in your teal hymnals. There's a river flowing in my soul. Please rise in body or in spirit. Seated. Our reading today is the poem Ithaca by C.P. Cavafy, translated by Edmund Keeley. As you set out for Ithaca, hope your road is a long one, full of adventure, full of discovery. Lystragonians, Cyclops, angry Poseidon, don't be afraid of them. You'll never find things like that on your way as long as you keep your thoughts raised high, as long as rare excitement stirs your spirit and your body. Lystragonians, Cyclops, wild Poseidon, you won't encounter them unless you bring them along inside your soul, unless your soul sets them up in front of you. Hope your road is a long one. May there be many summer mornings when, with what pleasure, what joy, you enter harbors you're seeing for the first time. May you stop at Phoenician trading stations to buy fine things. Mother of pearl and coral, amber and ebony, sensual perfume of every kind. As many sensual perfumes as you can. And may you visit many Egyptian cities to learn and go on learning from their scholars. Keep Ithaca always in your mind. Arriving there is what you're destined for. But don't hurry the journey at all. Better if it lasts for years, so that you're old by the time you reach the island, wealthy with all you've gained on the way, not expecting Ithaca to make you rich. Ithaca gave you the marvelous journey. Without her, you wouldn't have set out. She has nothing left to give you now. And if you find her poor, Ithaca won't have fooled you. Wise as you will have become, so full of experience, you'll have understood by then what these Ithacas mean. Thus ends the reading. At FPC here, we share our plate every Sunday with different organizations that we select every year, and each month is a different agency. This month is our own FPC guest table, which is once a month on the first Friday, where we hold a free and open community dinner to anyone who would wish to come. And it's also wonderful food. So it takes about $250 per month just for the food alone to keep this program running. And so one of the ways we support it is through having it as one of our monthly plate sharing organizations. So for the work of that organization and the good work of this church, we will now have the morning offering.
We are.
Thank you, choir. And a special thanks to our ukulele and guitar players this morning. There are many reasons why people embark upon a spiritual journey, on a pilgrimage. It often begins with a longing. It can be a longing that arises out of personal struggle. Something isn't right in your world somehow. Or a theological struggle, wanting to understand the nature of the universe and our place in it. Or a struggle with the nature of humanity and the way the world is right now. In the book Reason and Reverence, Religious Humanism for the 21st Century, William R. Murray writes, "A few years ago, as I was preparing a sermon, I asked some of the members of my congregation what they understood by the word spirituality. I got a number of different answers. Some said things like, 'I'm looking for something more to my life, something deeper and more satisfying. I'm not sure exactly what it is I'm looking for, but that's what I call spirituality.' Others said they were seeking deeper spiritual meanings and purposes than they had found thus far. Some said they were looking for something to replace the faith in God that they had lost. Spirituality," he continues, "was not easy for them to define, but it was clear that people were not entirely satisfied with their lives. They felt something was missing. Many were unable to see their lives in the context of a divine plan, and they were feeling an emptiness in their lives, a lack of meaning and purpose. It was not enough to go to work 5 days a week, watch television, go to movies, do some reading, attend a party here and there, and spend times with family. Without something deeper, these things were not enough." Bill Murray is speaking of a spiritual longing, a yearning. Here's the Sufi mystic poet Rumi on a similar expression of yearning. "There is a candle in your heart ready to be kindled. There's a void in your soul ready to be filled. You feel it, don't you? You feel the separation from the beloved. Invite him to fill you up. Embrace the fire. Remind those who tell you otherwise that love comes to you of its own accord, and the yearning for it cannot be learned in any school." This yearning has been expressed by many people of faith over the years. The theologian C.S. Lewis put it very eloquently and simply, calling it the stab, the pain, the inconsolable longing. Jewish theologian Abraham Joshua Heschel wrote, "The great yearning that sweeps eternity is a yearning to praise, a yearning to serve. And when the waves of that yearning swell in our souls, all the barriers are pushed aside, the crust of callousness, the hysteria of vanity, the orgies of arrogance. For it is not the I that trembles alone. It is not a stir out of my soul, but an eternal flutter that sweeps us all." In the Kabbalah, it says, "I come empty-handed, bringing to you nothing but my desire to receive your gifts. Fill my soul." It is this kind of yearning for wholeness, for peace, for deeper understanding, for connection, for love, for justice. That yearning that leads us into a spiritual journey, a deliberate seeking of answer through a physical path of journeying or an intellectual quest for knowledge and truth, or a spiritual pilgrimage through experience and spiritual practice. Sufi leader Alireza Nurbakhsh explains what the concept looks like in Sufism. In Sufism, the state of spiritual learning, talab, is the force that drives an individual on the path towards perfection. Without the yearning for truth, one simply has no desire to embark on a spiritual journey and cannot comprehend why others feel compelled to do so. In his book, There is a God, There is No God, A Companion for the Journey of Unknowing, John Curvin writes, "There comes a moment when there arises in your soul a moment that you are at loss to describe. It moves you to desire you know not what, only that it is beyond your imagining." And Elizabeth Lesser in The Seeker's Guide similarly writes, "If we allow ourselves to rest in the quiet recesses of the heart, most of us will feel a gentle tugging, a sense of longing, humming softly in the background of our daily life, This is the call we answer when we journey on a spiritual path. And again, the theologian C.S. Lewis said, apparently then, our lifelong nostalgia, our longing to be reunited with something in the universe from which we now feel cut off, to be that on the inside of some door which we have always seen from the outside, is the truest index of our situation. The old ache, an inconsolable longing, will be gloriously healed as we are summoned and ushered into the bright and luminous joy. We shall be bathed in the beauty of God's presence, and as the children know, a bath can sometimes be a hilarious thing. But for now, we travel the long, dusty road as a company of Chaucerian pilgrims on our way to Canterbury. That long and dusty road, the long and winding road, as the Beatles called it, that path less traveled can look really different than we might expect a spiritual journey to look like. I'm going to give you two examples of spiritual journeys, one maybe the ridiculous, the other more sublime. The first, as I thought about my own spiritual journey moments in my own life, one story came back to me. When I was a graduate student, I joined an organization called Alternative Spring Break, where a group of us spent our spring break doing a social service project. And so it was that I was there with about a dozen other college students, one of whom was my friend Manda, and we were spending the spring break down in Mobile, Alabama, working for the Mobile AIDS Support Service. At the beginning of the week, it was all just office work and yard work. I filed files. I tore apart endless strips of condoms so that they could be put into little bowls to be put out for places to have access to them. I raked lawns. None of this was what I was expecting when I was volunteering my spring break for the cause. I thought it would be transformative. I thought it would be filled with justice, filled with spirit, that it would somehow change me. This didn't feel like justice work or deepening my spirit or really anything. But then, when I least expect it, came a day when it all changed. I was down in Mobile, as I said, with a whole group of students, one of whom was my friend Manda Pullen. She writes under the name MJ Pullen. And I'm going to read you her account of it from her blog. We both were changed in very similar ways, and I thought her words were... She has more memory of it in a way than I do. She writes, I don't remember how Sin and I got the assignment from Mobile AIDS Support Services, but I will never forget how I felt walking into Cornelius's home that day, more nervous than I cared to admit. He was an African-American man in his 80s, suffering with AIDS and already blind. We were on spring break, volunteers, and had spent most of the week, as she described, elbow deep in condoms and menial jobs. I never knew condoms could be boring until that trip. Frankly, I think I was less nervous about AIDS than I was about Cornelius's general living conditions. He lived in poverty and illness alone and was not able to clean up after himself. Entering his home, I was struck by an overwhelming sense of ickiness, as Alicia Silverstone said around that time. It's funny how all the logic and education in the world are nothing in the face of some of our most basic fears and aversions. But we were there to help. We'd given up our spring breaks getting hammered on the beach with all the other college kids, and we'd come all this way. We were talking the talk. Our pictures had been in the newspaper, for Pete's sake. We'd better earn the attention. So we started talking with Cornelius a bit and tried to give him some company and comfort, but mostly we cleaned. We did week-old dirty dishes in a tiny kitchen infested with roaches. We wiped furniture and walls. And for my personal Everest, I scrubbed the toilet. Even now, with countless dirty diapers under my belt and experience cleaning up some pretty disgusting things over the course of my life, I still get squeamish cleaning toilets, even my own. And all you nurses and hospice workers out there, just go right ahead and laugh. I can take it. So to be faced with cleaning up after this elderly man who had been so sick, it brought out my least rational reactions. Maybe I'm imagining backwards, but I think I still remember the yellow light in that room and the brown tile walls, a large crack in the porcelain tub. I wasn't sure I was up to the task. Once I had scolded myself for being a huge baby and got on with it, of course it took no time at all. When we were done, I remember breathing deeply the fresh air from Cornelius's rickety front porch. I felt proud of myself for doing something challenging and sad that I couldn't do more for him. It wasn't until days later that it occurred to me to wonder how he felt. A proud man, rendered helpless by this disease, and listening as a couple of young white college kids from another state invaded his personal space. It wasn't just our HIV status that made us different. It was also economics, education, race, gender, and age. He seemed grateful for the help, but I'm sure he also resented needing it, too. Looking back, I think I was lucky to have that opportunity to meet Cornelius, and even for a few hours, a connection that would have been unlikely under most other circumstances. That day in Mobile, in the most unlikely of ways, in the most menial of jobs, our spring break became a spiritual journey. It became one because we were changed and transformed in that moment, fundamentally at that time. The change didn't come from the work. The change didn't come from Cornelius. It came from within. Of course, it is not always scrubbing toilets that leads to spiritual awakening. Good news. For the other extreme, I turn to Annie Dillard, who writes in Pilgrim at Tinker Creek. It was sunny one evening last summer at Tinker Creek. The sun was low in the sky upstream. I was sitting on the sycamore log bridge with the sunset at my back, watching the shiners the size of minnows who were feeding over the muddy sand in skittery schools. Again and again, one fish, then another, turned for a split second across the current, and flash, the sun shot out from its silver side. I couldn't watch for it. It was always happening somewhere else, and it drew my vision just as it disappeared. Flash, like a sudden dazzle on the thinnest blade, a sparkling over a dun and olive ground at chance intervals from every direction. Then I noticed white specks, some sort of pale petals floating from under my feet on the creek's surface, very slow and steady. So I blurred my eyes and gazed towards the brim of my hat and saw a new world. I saw the pale white circles roll up like the world's turning, mute and perfect. And I saw the linear flashes gleaming like silver, like stars being born at random down a rolling scroll of time. Something broke and something opened, and I filled up like a new wineskin. I breathed in air like light. I saw a light like water. I was the lip of a fountain the creek filled forever. I was ether. I was the leaf in the zephyr. I was flesh, flake, feather, bone. But a few paragraphs later, Dillard writes, "The secret of seeing, then, is the pearl of great price. If I thought he could teach me to find it and keep it forever, I would stagger barefoot across 100 deserts after any lunatic at all. But although the pearl may be found, it may not be sought. The literature of illumination reveals this above all. Although it comes to those who wait, it is always, even for the most practiced and adept, a gift and a total surprise." This is a bit frustrating, that we can't just force a spiritual journey to happen, to say, I'm going to go down to Mobile and I'm going to be transformed, and that we have to wait for a gift and a surprise to get it and not get it when we want to. Consider that Carl Jung, considered by many to be an expert on spirituality, once said, "In my case, Pilgrim's Progress consisted in my having to climb down 1,000 ladders until I could reach my hand to the little clod of earth I am." When you're on a quest of the soul, struggling for life, the universe, and everything, there is no easy answer like 42. We know that it involves, as Thoreau said, living deliberately. The poet Wendell Berry says, and the world cannot be discovered by a journey of miles, no matter how long, but only by a spiritual journey, a journey of 1 inch, very arduous and humbling and joyful, by which we arrive at the ground at our own feet and learn to be at home. And the spiritual writer Mark Nepo writes, to journey without being changed is to be a nomad. To change without journey is to be a chameleon. To journey and be transformed by the journey is to be a pilgrim. So may we all be pilgrims, even if it takes 1,000 ladders, pilgrims that are open to being transformed by life, by those around us, by the experience of others, by the river flowing in our souls. Here at FPC, we are travelers together, as our closing hymn says, kindred pilgrim souls, making our way by the light of the heavens. And I can't promise you smooth sailing or easy passage. All I can promise you is companions for the journey and a star to sail by. May it be so. Our closing hymn is number 1064, Blue Boat Home. Please rise in body and spirit. Beloveds, as you journey from this place out into the rest of the world on your road less traveled, your starry seas, your rivers called journey, may you take with you this sense of home, the knowledge that you bring with you, all these kindred pilgrim souls. Amen.
Brotherhood of men.